Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively getting into the crab cake season here, the crab season, as it were. We're going to be down at Fadley's on Fridays, especially when the Orioles are home. We'll be there 2 to 5 this Friday. Luke Jones is joining me. I've already booked some like celebrities and stuff. Thomas Dolby's going to come down. He's a vegetarian, so I'm going to feed him the mac and cheese. But we're going to be doing this each and every Friday that the Orioles are home. The Orioles are relevant. The Orioles are first place team. All this good stuff is happening. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I will have the Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away on Friday, next couple of Fridays. Luke and I will be together. Also, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions and Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. The Orioles taking on the Washington Nationals in a mini set of just a couple of games. Got a couple of days off. Boy, how things have changed. This guy and I were getting together back when the Capitals were doing the Stanley Cup drunken in the fountain dance. This guy and I got together when the Nationals won a World Series, and they did not really get a chance to celebrate that because, I mean, it set off a plague, I mean, them winning a World Series. And we never really talk about the Wizards except when they're taking their district jerseys and maybe moving them into Virginia. He once served a hell of a vegetarian meal, but a big fat steak in his day as well. He is one of the really important voters in all things polling with college football and basketball. We welcome our defending champion from WTOP. It sounds all newsy and stuff, but he's a sports guy. We welcome Dave Preston back on. Dave Presto, just in time for Orioles v. Nats.
Yes.
This is a topsy-turvy thing, right? I mean, like, yes. I tell my wife every night, this is the best Oriole team I've ever seen in my life. Like, and I've seen them all just because of the possibilities of the youth. This is an amazing thing that's going on here, man.
Well, and what we do down in Washington, because there's still a sizable audience of people who live in Northern Virginia who, for 30 years, their only way of seeing Major League Baseball was to drive up to Memorial Stadium and then Camden Yards. And the Washington Post covered the Orioles as though they played in Bethesda as opposed to Baltimore. So there's still, even though there's been a Major League team here for almost 20 years, and now I guess this is the 20th anniversary of the Nats being the Expos, there's still a pull. People who still are interested in the Orioles and the fact that Cal Ripken's entire career occurred when this was the major league team for Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia. You could go maybe all the way down to Richmond, even as far as people who love the Birds and were into the Orioles. There were Orioles network affiliates in Washington. There was an Orioles team shop a couple blocks away from the White House. This was an Orioles part of Orioles Nation, if you want to extend the net as so. So we still cover the Orioles a little bit. And each week for my Nats notebook on WTOP.com, I used to title it O's Woes. Now it's Break Up the Birds because they're so darn good. And each week it's amazing how many good young players we read about and we hear about, whether it's Colton Cowser, whether it's Gunnar Henderson being AL Player of the Month, whether it's the pitching staff, that the guys that you trot out there. This is a few years ago, I compared the Orioles season to 1989, where it's like, you know what? If years from now, you're going to be saying that was the year that I got locked into following the Orioles, because all of a sudden they were having an incredible season, magical season. And this year, just I didn't watch the entire series with the Yankees last week, but I caught enough of the series to what they are really built for October. And this is going to be a fun team to watch all season long.
Well, the way they've been pitching, too. I mean, Bradish and Means weren't a thing 2 weeks ago. Rodriguez gets hurt. Kimball's been no good. But, you know, the Nationals had that era, right? I saw Juan Soto running around here, last week as well. Strasburg, no Mas. I saw Jason Worth, Kentucky Derby Day, looking like he's in the Oak Ridge Boys,
he owned 10% of the horse. I think it was Dornock, which was starting on the rail, which is like the worst place you want to start nowadays. There hasn't been a Derby winner since 1986 from the number one post position, and that extended this past week. By the way, the Derby picks for Presto's picks on X at DAV Presto and at WTOP. I got the second place horse right, the third place horse right. The team I picked to win it all finished dead last. So,
you know, I had Girardi on last week, and I'll have him back on next week because he's been my guy all my life. But we talked about betting horses to finish last, which is like, something like proposition bets and stuff like that. And he talked about Andy Beyer doing this in 1989 in the Sunday Silence race.
Right.
He was watching the 16th and 17th horses and told this crazy story. But I guess in the gambling era, and I know, you know, you don't come from a gambling background as I know, or neither do I, but,
right.
And we certainly didn't talk about it like that. It really is amazing. Horse racing was the only place you could gamble when this party started here 32 years ago, me doing radio. And yeah. Now it is just, it's a ubiquitous thing that it's part of the broadcast. It's a different terminology than I think you and I are used to discussing sports.
Well, it's amazing how it used to be coded, where it's like, oh, I think they'll win by a field goal. Jimmy the Greek couldn't give specific points, but he could kind of lead you there. Whereas now there's
Dave,
no subtlety
whatsoever. Let me tell
whatsoever.
You about the intangibles. You got to have the intangibles,
oh,
Dave.
I love the check marks. Oh, gosh. The world was better when we had 30 minutes. I think we got more from 30-minute network football pregame shows than we do from the two-hour shenanigans that they have now. And,
Phyllis George, where have you gone?
Yes. Well, a world without check marks and going through the big board, that was a powerful time.
Dave Preston is our guest. He is at WTOP. Look, I want to talk some Orioles and I want to talk some Nats to get like all that. But you're a news organization, and before we even began, your first thought to me, and we're Facebook friends and this and that, and I see your fun derby hat and your March Madness cups and your fascination with gooey green March milkshake. I mean, I've seen it all. James Bond.
Yes.
Technically,
there's no milk nor shake in the Shamrock Shake. I could be
What's
wrong.
What's in it?
It's a minty goodness. It's a peppermint milkshake, basically.
All right. Well, I'll have that any time of year. I don't need to get that out of the freezer section.
No.
You mentioned to me that I'm from Dundalk and the Key Bridge, and I have my Costa shirt on. I would have put it on, and I'll certainly meet you there. You cannot access it by bridge. You have to use the tunnels now, but we can still get you to Costa's. And, you know, I'm concerned about my friends over in the peninsula and it being sort of shut down. We're talking 4.5 years to build the bridge, and Larry Hogan says this, and we got an election next week to figure out who's going to be doing what, but where were you that morning? Because you brought it up with me as it being a story that well ripples beyond Dundalk, Baltimore, even Maryland, where you are at WTOP serving people, that in D.C. it's something that's been on your mind as a news person.
Yeah, I mean, it is a story that ripples, you know, all the way down here to Washington, D.C. And I think it's not, yes, there's an election this year, but it is the story of the year. At least in the Mid-Atlantic region. And I think for Baltimore, it's the story of the decade. And it's just, and how do they build back this bridge? What do they do to keep the port of Baltimore, which is, you know, if you buy a car or farm equipment, it's coming from out of the country, odds are it's going through Baltimore. So it is a seismic story that has legs far beyond the next 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, you know, when this is finally built. I was working that morning at WTOP, and I wake up at 3:30, Nestor, and I each morning to get in for the 5:25 sportscast, WTOP.com, if listeners are out there and you want to take a tiny, tiny 1 minute break from, WNST.com, check us out. No more than 2 minutes because we're limited now in time. But driving in, I turn on traffic and weather, which we play every, 10 minutes on the eights. And somebody mentioned the Key Bridge being out. Now, we have a Key Bridge here in Washington that goes over the Potomac, goes from where the Marriott used to be. That's now shutting down. It used to be called Lee Highway. Now it's 29. And it goes over to M Street, which leads you to Georgetown. And that is not my primary route to get into Washington. I take the Chain Bridge, which is a little further north, but I often take, if I have to go through a different part of town, I often use the Key Bridge. And that was my first thought. And then I heard, oh, it's the Francis Scott Key Bridge, Baltimore. Okay, that's not me. But the entire day, that was all we were focused on. We had a couple of people up there. We've had people up there for press conferences, Zoom calls, things of that vein. And because I think even though, Baltimore is a different city than Washington, and Washington is in a different district, what have you, than the state of Maryland and Northern Virginia, where a lot of our listeners are, completely different state, even though it's called a Commonwealth. It's still such a huge story for us, and to see, to see the bridge collapse, to hear about the rescue efforts.
Well, being a newsman at 3:30 in the morning, first thing when, and anybody that sees my documentary will know that I grew up in a newsroom. Like I grew up as a 15-year-old kid in a legitimate newsroom, cutting through what is bullshit and what is news, what is fake news and what can we report, what is confirmed and what is verified,
what is
a rumor and what is a fact, right? Did this happen or did this not happen? And I was awakened by Jessica Vallis, who builds my website. Her husband was on one of the very, very, very first responder teams at 2 a.m.
Okay.
And she had sent me a couple of texts that I did not see because my ringer was off because we were out. Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta were hiding from me on a balcony in Orlando that night at 1 o'clock in the morning. I went, I didn't go to bed till 1, but I got up. And the first thing I think is verify, right? Like it's the newsman in me, it's the journalist in me, whether it can be, whether I would report it on WNST or not, or whether I'd put it on my Facebook page as a fact. I take that very, very seriously in the modern era of fake news and getting fake presidents and, you know, like, voted in, just crazy stuff that's happened in the news industry. This was one of those moments where, like, I saw it. It was a personal text from someone who was in on it who told me. So I knew it was true, but I looked at the video and it looked like an AI fake, like on my phone at 5:42 in the morning. And I got my glasses on and I'm in a hotel room and Luke is in the other bed. And we just went to bed 4 hours ago and he had to do the NFC coaches breakfast. So we were getting up early. I mean, our alarms were set for 5:45 because he had a 7 o'clock, you know, curtain time too. And we were going to get up and get moving. Thankfully, we don't drink as much as we used to, Dave.
No.
But the amazing thing is just verifying whether it had actually happened at 3:30, 4 in the morning. She sent me a link to The Guardian, in a, you know, a UK site that would be awake at 9 in the morning there, 3 in the morning here to be able to put a story up. But I saw it, and the thing that verified it for me, it was 3 minutes of me fumbling with my phone. And then like, oh, I'm in a hotel room. Where's my remote control? And where's CNN? And boop, boop, CNN comes on. And Johnny O's at the podium, like, doing his thing. And the fire chief was brilliant early in the morning in just Joe Friday. What we want is media.
Right.
Just the facts. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not going to guess. First things, let's save lives. You know, like, all of that. And untangling a 4 a.m. There'll never be a story. To your point, at the paper, we always had a fire drill. Probably shouldn't say this, but it's true. Fire drill about a plane going down at BWI, right? That would be the ultimate fire drill, other than a bomb or something crazy. You know, we had every standoff situation, all, you know, all sorts of SWAT this and, you know, things probably all sorts of terrorist type things that would happen.
Scenarios.
But the scenario from a news team of all hands on deck of something happening, the president's been shot, you know, something that's just crazy, was BWI and a plane crash, right? That would be the ultimate. Because we had, I worked at the paper when the Amtrak crash happened in Chase, Maryland in 1986. This was an unbelievable all hands on deck tragedy, code 911, you know, type thing. This bridge going down was that sort of moment at 2 in the morning when nobody's awake. I even said to a few of the electeds, like, having your phones on and having everyone in your staff have their phone on in case there's been some, a boat ran into the bridge and knocked it over. I mean, stuff that you can't even fathom. But I think from a news perspective, you're driving into work that morning. For anybody in the business of reporting news, it was a little bit of a freaky, like, is this real? There was that moment that I worried about for you, you know?
And the thing is, too, it's like you don't grasp it initially because the magnitude of the bridge. Because
like, how's that
thinking,
possible?
You're thinking, okay, oh, gosh, that's horrible. When are they going to have it back up again? And then you realize, no, it's going to be years before it's up again. It's going to be months before, you know, they can even they get rid of all of the debris. And it's, my nephew plays with Legos and builds stuff. And it's like, well, it's not, you know, it's just like everything smashes down. But to build it up, you need like little tiny Lego guys to build it up. And it's so like, I've seen, I forget who it is, but I see some of the equipment posted online that they brought in to Baltimore to remove some of the debris.
The world's greatest project. I mean, it's unbelievable. Army engineers are here, and here we go. I mean, it's and I'll say this, and the electeds have said this, and we'll get back to baseball. Dave Preston's here from WTOP. You know, the right side, left side, he said, she said, you're a Democrat, you're an elephant, you're a rhino, whatever you are. Like that hasn't been the early going on this. It's been more like, hey, man, we're all, it's not a Democrat bridge, a Republican bridge, it's an American bridge, not even a Maryland bridge or a Baltimore bridge. I would have told you it was a Dundalk bridge over in Pasadena. They would have called it theirs. They would, you know, they would have said that was an Anne Arundel County bridge. But I would just say for everybody here, it was, it's amazing. It's been four and a half weeks. And it's the first thing you mentioned to me, because I'm from Baltimore and you're not. And you think like, yeah, I mean, we all cried. It's been a crazy emotional thing around here. Right. You know what else we're going to cry? Going to cry if the Orioles have a parade. And give me, it's been 6 months I've had you on. Maybe I think I had you on football season. Peter's dead.
Right.
John's gone, right? Rubenstein owns the team. Rubenstein's putting on the floaty outfit, and he's going to squirt everybody Friday
new
night.
New guy, yeah.
Got a new dude, Cal, making commercials now, all this.
True.
What does the business, you know, journalist guy, not the fan that maybe some people down in the D.C. suburbs will come back. And the thing you make about Cal is true. Cal was everybody's favorite player, every girl, every boy from Reston, Virginia for 25 years. Like, those people would have a – oh, the Orioles are good, and that jerk that owned them's gone. I'll go back to a game. You know, maybe I'll go up there twice a year this year and go on fireworks night or whatever. And give me your D.C. take on that, because things have changed so dramatically, even though I don't have my press credential yet. I'm under review, which I don't know how to
good
explain
luck with that
to you. I'm under review. But I would say things have changed very radically, dramatically, and then, boom, the team's the best team in the sport. It's kind of wacky, and I don't know how I would take to that if I had given up the Oriole hat, hated Peter, had a red Walgreens hat, had a parade, had my own 8 years of sort of fun. I mean, the Nationals have their own little thing. They don't need to be an Oriole fan for it to be cool, but I am thinking this is an open door with ownership, Cal, great baseball, all of that going on at a time when Nationals aren't so good, right?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the Nationals are 500 right now. They would make the playoffs if the playoffs were to begin today. Granted, it's May, they don't, but the playoffs won't begin for another, 5 months. But this is a young team that, when you think of the Orioles, the Nats are probably 2 or 3 years behind the Orioles' pace where they are, because the O's began their rebuild at, what, after 2017, 2018 in reality, and the Nats began theirs in effect 2021, you know, or so.
Well, the only way you get Strasburg is if you stink, right?
Yeah.
The only way you get, you know, Adley Rutschman is the stink.
Is,
I mean, that's
bad,
part
of
the deal.
Right, yeah. And so I think there is a window of opportunity for the O's to pluck some fans who used to love to go to Camden Yards. I think they got to sell the city and the fun stuff to do around the ballpark just as much. And I think what hurts the O's is the fact that the new Major League Baseball schedule, everybody plays everyone. So if you live in Washington, you have the opportunity to see every American League team within 2 years. Whereas previously, if, say, you're Sully from Southie and you're down here and you're an AL East guy and you want to see your Sox, you know what? You might see Boston play in Washington once every 6 years or so, but you know that you can see them every year in Baltimore. And I think there'd be more fans going up to Baltimore if you still had the tighter schedules where you just played another division, as opposed to you're playing everybody in baseball with, you know, at home within a 2 year stretch. But I think it's a great, I think with the O's playing as well as they are, I think if they do enjoy some postseason success, win a series, maybe, you know, get to the ALCS, I think they'll definitely be a team on fire next year, because this Nats team is still maybe a year or two away from being a contender. Although right now they're a scrappy, pesky team that has a shot of finishing 500.
I am always inclined to talk James Bond with you. I mean, I'm always pulled toward that. I'm not going to do that right now. I want to, while I have you on, because I don't have a lot of, like, I would say college sports experts on as much as maybe I used to in the past or whatever. And I could reach the Jimmy Patsos or other people to talk about this, but I want you to talk NIL with me as Sully from Southie and an old school guy and a guy who cut your teeth. You were a waiter trying to get into the industry. You were a sports guy. You're now like one of the voters on polls and all of this stuff. Right. You've been through it all, like as a fan, you know, up through what attracted you to college basketball and college sports to begin with. And if you're a college football person from Alabama or Auburn, you're a New Hampshire guy. You know, you don't have college football, honestly, in you. You're like a true sportsman and a sports guy and a sports journalist, as I remember sports journalists to be back when I used to be one. Explain that part of the NIL to me, because it is so drifted me and so many people. And dude, I saw your picture one night at a Maryland game, and it looked like there were 3,000 people there. They're playing like Iowa on Valentine's night. Kids don't want to be there. Girls don't want to be there. Boys don't want to be there. Nobody wants to be there. Nobody wants to pay to be there. And I'm thinking to myself, whew, man, the air comes out of the tire in college sports.
Right.
It's gone. And I'm not being a dick. I don't miss it. I don't feel like I need to sit and watch Georgetown play Villanova in basketball or Providence play Syracuse or any of that anymore. And I don't understand what's happened to it, but I worry for the whole bottom of it, because it was always this illicit thing where they were renting these players to make money. And it was always dirty, hideous SAT faking scores and money in bag. I mean, all of it was greasy. All the handlers, AAU, all of that. Where is it now, and where is it going from someone like you that literally loves it?
Well, I think a lot of the what we don't like is now just up front. You know, players were always getting paid on, you know, a lot of players were getting paid on some level. Now they're getting paid legally through the NIL. And unfortunately, with the by combining, if it had just been NIL, if it had just been transfer portal without having to sit a year out, I think it would be fine. But the fact that those two converged at the same time, now guys and girls are leaving, going elsewhere after a year. And it erodes your feelings for these players in these schools, because back in the day, you knew that you'd see Juan Dixon for 3 or 4 years. You knew you'd see Chris Wilcox. Oh, we only got to see him for 2 years. Now a player who stays 2 years, that's more the rule than the exception. And you see guys now on their second, maybe even third team. Same with the women. There was a player, Destiny Slocum, played for Maryland. She was freshman of the year. She wound up transferring to Oregon State, I think, and then wound up transferring to Arkansas. So, and that was before the safeguards of you had to sit out a year unless you were a graduate student. So,
well, these coaches stealing $6 and $8 million a year from state governments to coach team, state you, and I'm the best this, the coach and the recruiter. All the reasons, I guess, Gary got out of it years ago, and I haven't heard what his freshness would be about all of that. But what you're trying to build, and you're saying what my value is, you know, I just released a documentary. My value is I didn't move to a different city every 3 years trying to build a brand around that for 40 years. I plopped down in one place at one time so that you can build something that has meaning, and all the things that you try to put behind that, the greasy part of the university using a kid to win a championship and a coach to get the next job, which is what I've seen for 35 years. I just don't know where it's going. I don't know how it's appealing to, based on what they were selling me as a Maryland sports fan, as a Terrapins fan,
you don't get as much of a chance to see these players grow up in front of your eyes. That's what was always so cool about, you know, with the Maryland women, you'd see
Christy
Coleman.
Winters. I remember when she was a player.
You'd see those players grow up in front of your eyes. Now, at least half of those players are going somewhere else, and they're playing, you know, at least one other spot. You know, Brenda Fries has had a lot of challenges dealing with a lot of departing players. She's restocked well enough over the last year, and she should have a strong nucleus this year. But unfortunately, instead of coaching a program, you're coaching a team. And it happens the same in football with the guys that Mike Locksley has had to replace. And the shame, too, is if you're a small school like, say, a Richmond, and you find a diamond in the rough and you develop them and they become a good player, who's to say they don't go elsewhere? And so you don't get all the hard work you have done as Chris Mooney, as a head coach, to work these players into, you know, solid parts of your rotation. You don't get to enjoy the fruits of that labor.
Well, the psychology of the kid is, I'm going to go rent this for a year and see how it works out. Yeah. And if I don't like it, it's like a job at the mall at this point.
Right. And
like,
I think
literally,
and I think too, the players view the colleges now as a way to get paid professionally. They want to make money now, but they also want to find their way. Okay, this is a precursor to what I'm going to be doing. If I can get, you know, a look in the NFL, or if I can play overseas, or if I can do this or that. And what it really does, what it hurts too, is some of these guys and women who have been, they play for two or three teams over a four or a five, or with COVID now a 6-year span, when they're done and their pro career is done, where do they go home to? And that's why I really appreciate a kid like Dante Scott, who stayed at Maryland all the way through. He probably could have gone somewhere else, but he stayed at Maryland and he knows where his home is. Even though he grew up in Philly, he knows that Maryland is where he went to, you know, that's his alma mater, and he's a Maryland guy, as opposed to having two or three schools that you can call as your own, but do they call you as their own? Probably not. So, and I think alumni and fan bases gravitate towards the players in any sport, football, women's basketball, men's basketball, lacrosse, that were there for 4 years. And shine.
Well, you want
for
to
you.
Like the kids playing on your team. We went through this with Steve Francis here 25 years ago, right? Like, you know, he's here 5 minutes, and that's not what Gary.
And he
did.
Has a banner. He has a jersey hanging in the rafters, which
remember, Krzyzewski wouldn't let you even near anything if you weren't staying 4 years. But we're you know, that's the difference from being old, right? Like us, and that's why I brought it up with you. Dave
it's
Preston can
animal.
Be found at WTOP.com, and Dave Presto out on the all things Twitter. He covers the college game as well as anybody. Did I cover all the bases on all this Baltimore Washington thing? I mean, there really is there's no rivalry between the cities, and that's really all 20 years into this, it's kind of like all we have to do is figure out the Masson thing and how Ted gets his piece down there, and then they're staying, right? I mean, I haven't talked to Ted since his kid got fresh with me about 5 years ago after the Caps won the Cup and he fired Barry Trotz. He hadn't won a playoff series since then, but that whole thing, that drama must have eaten you up the last 5 months, right?
Like, well, it was one of those things that when they announced it, and this is after the Wizards had done this whole district jerseys and stuff like that, and then they bail. Then they, you know, and you know, the Capitals and Wizards, Abe Pollin, you know, for whatever you want to say about him as an owner, as far as putting a consistent winner out there or what have you, he did the city right by sinking some of his own money into it as well. Capital One Arena really helped revitalize the Chinatown area in a way that you can only do when you've got 82 guaranteed dates, and then you bring in other stuff here and there. I think when they announced that they were looking to move, it was presented as fait accompli. And unfortunately, even though Ted has forgotten more than I will ever learn on this earth, one of the smartest people, and he's done very well as a businessman. But for him not to read Virginia politics correctly, when you're dealing with a term limited governor who has no legislative experience, it's not like Glenn Youngkin had, you know, made his political bones going up through the House of Delegates or the Senate. Here's a guy who his whole thing was, I'm not a politician. So he doesn't know how to grease the wheels of the Senate and the House of Delegates. For Ted to hitch his star with him, and not to have, I could have been Ted's flunky and just hire me. I will send me down to Richmond and I will take delegates to lunch Monday through Friday, find the right people to kiss up to make things easier for me to get a team. For him not to do that, I think was the biggest mistake. I think he thought that he'd be welcomed as somebody who would provide a small part of Virginia, an economic engine, not realizing that.
Well, the state of Virginia has no pro sports, right? Literally.
No.
There's the Richmond Braves.
Group
was always going to, the Expos were always going to be in Reston or out by Dulles.
Right.
Like, that was the common thought that would have been better for the Orioles as well to some degree. But like the way it's gone down here, I've been on the air 32 years here, Dave. So I've talked through it all, like literally all of it. You know, arenas in Columbia and Camden Yards and was going to be in Columbia. We're going to put the team, you know, like I've heard every idea that there is. But the one thing I haven't heard is Virginia actually getting a pro team. And I thought, well, maybe this is their way to do that in the way that Jersey sort of stole everything from New York at a period of time, other than the Yankees. And the fact that it's not palatable. It's not palatable in Kansas City for the Chiefs on Missouri or Kansas. It's not palatable in California for Oakland, right? Like, or Sacramento. There's so many places that aren't getting money for this. And things aren't happening, including for the creep who owned the football team down there for a period of time. And now the new group's trying to figure out where they're going to put their thing. There's just not a whole bunch of money lying around. And Maryland just $600 million for you, Steve, $600 million for you, John, or Mr. Angelos, or Mr. Rubenstein. Like, that's not happening down there. And I do wonder about where the mojo is for the district to – think that the Capitals and the Wizards and a new arena or something is going to revitalize an area, because if it was going to do that, it would already be doing it where it is. And that's the unfortunate part of this. It sort of exposes behind the Wizard that the issue isn't the team being there. The issue is do you make it something people want to come and see? And that's true for the Orioles and Mr. Rubenstein here too.
Well, and I think that if it's not, the area isn't getting a boost by the Caps and Wizards staying in Washington, but the fact that they're not leaving, that is keeping the Chinatown district from just falling apart. Because either there's, if you don't have those magnets to go to from people from Virginia, people from Maryland and what have you, people from Northwest and other parts of the district, there's no reason to go down there. I mean, the Spy Museum even moved to LaFont Plaza, so you can't even do that.
Really?
You still got the portrait gallery, though, yeah.
See, I'll be honest with you. You know, once Ted's son got fresh with me and they won their cup and, you know, I was insulted in many ways. I have not in any way – I reached to Ted once, but I'm angry enough. He don't want to hear from me at this point. But I haven't been in the building I think I may have seen a concert of some denomination there, maybe two or three plague era, but I haven't been down to the building in years. And the last time I went, it was post COVID. I did go for something, but it was definitely not a hockey game. It definitely wasn't a basketball game. It was a concert of some kind. I just don't know which one it was, but it was maybe 2 years ago. I went to see something there and I was sort of taken aback by the neighborhood and what it's sort of like, wow, you know, it had definitely gotten to be a threatening place where things were out of business very quickly. I'm from Baltimore. I recognize all this. I lived in downtown Baltimore for 20 years. And I thought to myself, and then it felt like a minute later, he's trying to move the team out of Chinatown. I'm like, dude, like you're the mayor of that town too. It's your part of town.
Yeah.
Like the notion. And his son, when I had a relationship, talked to them, they talked about doing things and the weight of the roof not supporting certain lights and certain things because it was built in a different time. And also the fact that it's hollow underneath and there's like trains going underneath of it. And that's always affected the ice temperature, you know, that they've had rougher ice because of the heat coming up underneath the subway system. I mean, it's complex. I get all of that. And all of us have been down there for a hockey game, a concert, something, whatever. And I'll be honest, I never thought of it as like an awful experience. Once I moved downtown, I gave up sort of the hatred of they moved out of Largo and I've got to go further. You saw me in a million Caps games that, dude, I made that drive. I parked on New York Avenue. I didn't even hate it. I hate it more now that I live in you know, Timonium, right? So it's different for me now.
But I
warmed up to all of that. I was a customer. I was a fan. I was a supporter. I was a guy that took buses down there for that. But it was astonishing to me how kind of quickly after the parade, the last hockey game I went to was the Stanley Cup final there. I haven't been to a game since. The parade was the end for me. That day was the end of the end. I haven't been near the Leones' family since then. I'll bring that up when I have Ted on. I'll tell him what happened. I'll be glad to tell him what happened. But that neighborhood, is there anything about it that sounds appealing in regard to we're going to keep the teams here now. Right. We're going to find a way to make it work. Like, what does making it work mean? Because I'm asking the same thing for Rubenstein right. here about you said you got to make Baltimore appealing for people to come to.
Right.
Same thing would be true for those hockey team, the hockey team, the basketball team, right?
I think he's going to get more space for practice courts and stuff like that, and more office, you know, more office space because some businesses have closed down, so he'll be able to get some more of that. I mean, the Portrait Gallery's a block away. There are some nice restaurant venues. Clyde's is still next door, and that's a fantastic place to pre and post game. I think there are.
But I saw like Kaleo. I saw the famous chef, Jose Andres, like saying, "What are you doing? I'm your. You know, we were partners in this. Like,
right.
like Ted took on some serious. You think I talk bad about him? I mean, that it hasn't been a good 6 months for Ted.
No. And I think the fact that he had to come back to D.C. after things did not work out in Virginia, he had to eat some crow. I mean, granted, he's eating a very expensive crow on a very expensive plate with a gold fork and a knife. So he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine on the other end of this. And he's getting money from the city to stay. Is it as much as he won't get to create? They were calling it Ted Town, you know, a complex that would be, you know, built for the Caps and the Wiz, and they'd be able to, you know, have a lot more space and turn it into, I think what he really wanted to do was have, and we see this in some cities where it's just an entertainment mall with a stadium / arena alongside that, because that as an owner, you're able to score major bucks off of, but it's also a monument to your vision of, you know, entertainment vision that you can make money so many different ways.
Well, it's also a place you don't just go to for a game.
Exactly.
It has to be something outside of the framework of the 3 hours we play baseball or hockey or basketball.
Right. Right.
It has to be more robust than that. And that's just, what I say for the billion two we're spending, giving Bisciotti all this money, building a gold-plated bar that is behind the perimeter with $18 beers that people only get the – I'm from Baltimore. Yeah. Who's doing that? It ain't me, and it ain't anybody I know. And that's the part that really worries me about your city, Washington. It has federal money and all that. And my town, where Rubenstein went with Cal Ripken and said, please, sir, please support my junior town of Baltimore. But it is a problem because we don't have the Fortune 500 companies. We don't have the Skybox Group. We don't have the wine and cheesers and all of that. And
now you got a bridge that's down.
Yeah, but with the limitations for the Orioles and what their ceiling's going to be from a payroll standpoint, are they really going to be like the Red Sox or like the Cardinals or like the Reds or like the Rays or like what's that structure of the business going to look like? Because to your point and my point, it's going to take more people. It's going to take more people coming to revive Chinatown. It's going to take more people coming in a different way to revive our downtown and our Camden Yards and our Inner Harbor and all that. And these two cities, I remember Peter sitting with me at the barn. Let me tell you why we don't think D.C. should have a baseball team. And you can go listen to all that because let me tell you, Dave, the same thing that happened in the Bay Area is you're gonna have two depressed teams. Meanwhile, Oakland's still out there hanging on life support, right?
Yeah,
and you guys have had a parade, right? Got a stadium built in D.C.
True.
Like all of the Northern Virginia thing, it all went away. And the only thing that really happened was Mr. Angelos's entitlements off the television network made his boys fabulously wealthy so they can fight amongst themselves.
Right.
Because that's really the upshot. It was a lot of lousy baseball, a lot of low payrolls, and a legacy of making a lot of money in the end off the television network that never served anyone. It's been a messy thing the last 20 years, this baseball thing between Baltimore and Washington.
Thank goodness you're on the other side of it, because nothing determines the rise or the fall of a franchise like an owner. It's almost as though we are fan bases, your 18th century peasants. Or 19th century peasants, and you have a good king. Hey, Louis the 14th, we're awesome. Louis the 16th, not so much. George the 3rd, Victoria, we rule the world. You know, Edward the 7th.
Well, Rubenstein's down there showing off Cal Ripken like he's a diamond ring, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, Cal's here. Come bring the money back. Come
the
on
one
in
thing
and
I am
which
glad
is great.
About,
that's exactly what he should be doing. That's off to David Rubenstein for doing that.
The one thing that I am glad about is that because he does have Cal in the ownership structure, we. Cal doesn't get asked every time a job opens, hey, will you be the new Orioles manager? Hey, the GM opening is there. Will you take that? Hey, the job of the hot dog vendor at Boog's Barbecue is open. And which I'm sure like the first 20 times he was mentioned and he was asked by everyone in the media, hey, there's an opening. Do you want it? Do you think you'll get it? He's like, oh, that's very nice. But after a while, he's like, oh, gosh, no, I'm Cal Ripken. I'm doing what I want to do. And if I wanted to, he can't very well say, no, I don't want to work for Peter Angelos. You know, he can't, you know, be brutally honest if that's his opinion. But he has to gracefully say, oh, no, I haven't thought about it, when he probably has. But I'm sure he is happy that he's no longer being asked every 5 minutes if he's going to take the next job that's open in baseball.
I just hope it completes his legacy that he's as involved as he wants to be. No one likes Cal more than me. No. I mean, Cal's always been great to me. 30, going on 35 years I've known Cal. So, I you know, this re-welcoming and all of this, that's why I wanted to reach to you. I'm going to be reaching to so many people, but this is really a time of the tectonic plates have shifted underneath of Baltimore for sports, for the economy, for the federal money, for the leadership, just for everything, for the awareness that we can and will do better. And I love all of that. And I love it when our baseball team's good and yours stinks, Dave, even though you're probably
they don't stink. They're 500. They're 500.
They're going to stink.
Although they haven't been over 500 since July 2021. So but if you're at the ballpark tomorrow night, or if you're watching the game on Masson or what have you, or if you're listening on the radio up there, a couple players to keep your eyes on. C.J. Abrams, shortstop for the Nats. Absolutely fantastic. He's their best player. Also, Luis Garcia Jr. He was a rookie in 2020. He's bounced up and down. He's had some growing pains as a young major leaguer, but he's been on quite a tear. Hit .563 last week. He has 19 RBI to lead the team. I know that's chicken feed for the Orioles right there. But so there are some interesting pieces, and Nats pitching is actually a little bit better than it was the last couple of years. Starters are actually getting into the fifth and sixth inning, although Patrick Corbin is still winless on the season. But the Nats this year are a plucky, fun team to watch. The hope for this team is that they make other teams nervous in September and late August, and you know they can play a little bit of a spoiler, much like I think the Orioles were, you know, 2 years ago or so when they were overachieving before everybody got up there. The bulk of the next nucleus for this Nats team is still at the minor league level. Dylan Cruz, the number two pick last year. Also, James Wood, their top prospect, still in the minors. So this team will get better in the coming years. But right now, we're enjoying the ride of 17-17 for a team that hasn't started good since the days of Dusty Baker.
Yeah, it better be 17-19 on Thursday. Dave Preston is here. He is Dav Presto out on the Twitter thing. You can find him out in social media and at WTOP. And I get that right. You vote basketball and football, correct? Or no, just one or the other? You're both.
Yes, okay. I vote for both basketball and football in the AP poll. I also wear the straw boater hat.
Anybody
Kentucky
watching right now out there, let me do that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we're going to run a race here next week, man. We got to bring this action here. And, hey, I've done a lot of education, and I know you'll do that in the district as well, as to what's going on with Laurel. Laurel's going to host the Preakness for a couple of years, and then everything comes to Baltimore into perpetuity. So big, big changes in the racing industry for people to understand over the next week or two. You can follow Dave out on the interwebs. You can follow me and Luke. Luke will be around all week covering Orioles and Nationals baseball, as well as Ravens sort of have their little rookie camp going on.
Will Luke be at the ballpark Tuesday and Wednesday?
I am hoping he will be there. He had a rental car thing going on.
The coolest thing, there are new batting practice helmets for cups for ice cream. So you can take them with you.
See, here's the weird thing. This is where I get to be.
You don't like ice cream?
Now here's the deal. If Luke can't be there, they wouldn't let me sit in the seat because I'm sort of banned by the Orioles, but not by Major League Baseball. I don't know. So I would like to get a little cuppy thing with what kind of ice cream is that? Is that a Dutch chocolate or is it a dark
It's soft serve vanilla, chocolate, or swirl.
See, chocolate doesn't say anything to me because it could be any kind of chocolate. It could be that Dutch chocolate of like a Wendy's Frosty, or it could be a nice, deep, dark rich chocolate like a mousse, or
it
could
might
just
be
be
low
like
grade
a
chocolate. I think it's I don't think
low grade,
I
low
don't think they're
gray.
treating the press to high level chocolate. This is in the media
Come
room,
on, man. If you
so
can't afford some
yeah.
Hershey's or some Ghirardelli
No.
or something, what's wrong with these folks
Well,
down there?
it's for us schlubs in the media
Well, the team
for
was for
years.
sale. Now it's not for sale. Now
Yeah.
it'll be worth more. I will say this. The next time you and I get together, we can only hope that Mr. Rubenstein has untangled the twisted web of the Masson digital streaming issue.
Yes.
All I hear up here is great baseball. Let's get a deal where we stream the games where old, like Hispanic folks like myself, I was going to call myself Caucasian, but I'm really not. Old white folks like myself who've had the cable plug in, the cable unplug, the wife works in the telecom business. Just give me the games for reason. It's like
Yeah.
Springsteen, cold beer at a reasonable price. Just give me the games at a reasonable price in a reasonable way. That's what I want. And I know I speak for all of your people, Nationals people. That's all they want. After
True.
20 years, all of you were hoodwinked and hostagized by Mr. Angelos as well. So, just as bad for you as it was for us.
True.
I hope Mr. Lerner finally gets his money. Dave Preston can be found at WTOP. I with a great hat. Great. What is that hat? Is that what do you
It's
call
called
that?
a straw hat. It's called a straw boater. 100% straw. It's called a boater hat. So as opposed to the breathable fedora or the other fedora. So
Does it
we wore
get
this thing.
hotter or like if the sun's beating down? I went to the Oriole game
Right.
Thursday. It was 95 degrees, Yankees. I saw a guy in a hat like that. He had more of an, I call it old man fishing hat. It wasn't
Right.
quite the, you look like you're running for Congress in that hat, honestly.
See, this
Old
is the
man fishing
breathable
hat.
fedora. Now, this breathable fedora, it's good because
A little
it covers
more,
you
a
from
little
the
neck.
sun,
Okay.
but as you see, there's holes in it, so you're not going to overperspire.
I needed my Crocodile Dundee that day.
Yeah.
I needed like, and I'm going to tell Wendy Bronfein from Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter, who gave me the tickets right down on the dugout, where I could haze Juan Soto. I could taunt Aaron Judge. I could tell Anthony Rizzo the ball was over his head on strike three. That I was there, and I really felt like I needed the hat that you wear when you're on the camel in the desert.
Oh,
You
like
know,
a
like the
pith
whole,
helmet. Like the
like
pith helmet?
that whole big thing that the
Yeah.
guys in Men at Work had when they were going to
Yes.
the land of
Lawrence.
Down Under
Yes.
on a hippie trail and head full of zombie. Remember
Yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about what zombie is. That's Living
Highly
Left.
underrated band.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Who can it be now?
Yeah.
All right, good, good, good.
Overkill.
Yeah. Oh.
That was a good one.
Especially at night.
Yeah, man.
All
Oh,
right, man,
gosh.
you and I could go all day.
We
No
speak the
James
same
Bond.
language,
I will
Nestor.
just
That's what
say
I
this to
like.
you as a little Easter egg for you. There is a James Bond worthy frame in the 25th anniversary documentary. It's toward the end.
All
You'll know it when you
right.
see it. It actually comes, and I'm just gonna leave it. I'm gonna drop the mic on this. I was at Terrell Suggs's. He threw a party for himself because that's who he was. And somehow I got invited because a client had bought a table
Right.
and got stuck with tickets. And it was a James Bond party. It was at the Hyatt. It was on a
Okay.
Saturday night when the Ravens played like on Monday night or maybe bye weekend. It was in season. It was insane. If Harbaugh knew about it, he would have lost his mind. Maybe Billick was the coach. It was
Right.
five, six, seven, eight. I don't, somewhere in there. But I went
Okay.
to a James Bond themed party that didn't begin until 11 on the ticket, but really didn't start till 1 in the morning because it was a throwdown, it was a house party.
Right.
But you'll love the picture because it was
Oh,
James
good.
Bond.
Good stuff.
Let me show you how I posed. Look, was that good? More Roger Moore than Sean Connery, but we've been
Yeah.
through that before. Dave Preston is the one of the ultimate historians of all things James Bond, which is why I love him. He also covers college basketball and football really well for WTOP. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. I've held him too long now, long enough that the series will be over. It'll be a sweep for the Orioles because that's what we do, Dave.